This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, using the power of crowds to diagnose illnesses. To start us off this afternoon, the recent suicide of a transgender teen sparked a discussion on gender identity, both locally and across the country. But how the story was covered and some of the terms used to discuss the issue may have been unfamiliar or confusing to many. Joining us to help explain some of the basics in the transgender discussion are Dr. Sarah Carruthers, Assistant Professor of Internal Medicine and Pediatrics and Adult and Pediatric Endocrinology with Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and University of Cincinnati Medical Center, and social worker Sarah Painter with the Transgender Health Clinic at Children's Hospital. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Sarah and Dr. Carruthers, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah, let's start with transgender, which gets used a lot in media coverage, as though everyone fully understands what it means. But what exactly does transgender mean? There are a lot of layers to this word, aren't there?
Yeah, there are a lot of layers. So when we think about or look at a person who is transgender, that basically means that their inner sense of gender identity is different from the gender they were assigned at birth.
Okay, the gender they were assigned at, that's another term
that's
you
right.
hear a lot, gender assigned at birth. What does that mean?
So
exactly?
What that means is that when we're all born, even before we're born, everyone's very excited to hear, is it going to be a boy or is it going to be a girl? And really all we're looking there is, what are the sex characteristics that that person has? However, people who are transgender identify their gender differently in their brain. So their assigned gender, designated gender at birth, or their natal gender is actually just what the doctor says when you're born. Oh, it's a boy. But really, when kids are about 2 and 3 years old, or as early as 2 and 3, they actually develop their sense of gender identity in their mind and in their internal sense of self, and it can be different than what's on the outside.
Dr. Carruthers, help me understand this a little more. What is the difference between sex and gender?
Yeah, it's a great question, and one that we make a distinction on, certainly medically. So sex is really the physical attribute that characterizes a biologic maleness or femaleness. So that can include genetics, but also essentially physical characteristics like genitalia, for example. Whereas gender, as Sarah was saying, really is more an internal sense of self. So regardless of your anatomy, how do you identify yourself? How do you feel that you are internally thinking of oneself? So really sex can be thought of as more of a physical attribute, whereas gender is more of a self-identity.
Why are some people transgender, Dr. Carruthers? Do we have a sense of why this occurs?
Yeah, there's a lot of interest in trying to answer that question. I'm not sure that we know the answer to that question. I think that certainly we know that it is a common phenomenon and that it's one that is becoming more widely recognized as people feel more comfortable presenting themselves with their true identity. But I don't know that we don't have a specific answer. There's not one particular cause.
Does endocrinology play a role in this?
We do. There are multiple folks who can play a supportive role. Endocrinology plays a role with regard to hormone treatment, if that's desired, and that's just one component to treatment, which certainly would also include mental health services and other general medical care and support, such as Sarah can suggest in terms of community resources and others in creating a supportive environment for folks.
You know, Sarah, the tragic death of the local teenager, that sparked a lot of conversation about this. What is the rate of suicide among transgender people? Attempted suicide.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's actually really difficult to know that number because we actually believe there's probably a lot of individuals who are transgender that may have committed suicide that we don't know about. What I can tell you is that nationally, the current rate of attempted suicide for transgender individuals is around 41%. And I'd like to make a comment, too, to your question about sort of why does how does this come about?
Mm-hmm.
There are some things we don't know, I guess there's some things we know that it's not. So when we say what causes this, we know it's not caused by environmental factors. It's not caused by being abused or being raised and reared to be a certain way. So for example, you know, if you grow up in a female body and you learn to be a great fisher and a great hunter, that's not going to make you be a male. It just is going to make you a great hunter and fisher.
Okay. You're talking about the rate is roughly 40%,
41%? About 41% right now.
Now, doesn't it go even higher for people who don't have any kind of support from family
Absolutely.
And friends?
Absolutely, yeah. So rejection and lack of support is probably the largest predictor in increasing depression and suicidal ideation.
I've read as high as 60% for people who don't have support. Does that sound right?
Probably or more.
Well, what kind of support groups are out there?
So there's a number of different groups. We have some really great resources in our community. So we have the Transgender Health Program at Cincinnati Children's, which is led by Dr. Leanne Connard. And we have a multidisciplinary team. So I'm involved in Dr. Carruthers, who's on with us. We are in the process of going to be hopefully starting more additional supports in addition to our medical care. There's also Heartland Wellness Trans is a great local community. Heartland Trans Wellness is a great local community that has a lot of great supports. We have PFLAG for our parents. It's parents of lesbians and gays, which is a great support. We also have GLSEN, which is an association that works within the school districts.
Dr. Carruthers, have transgender people always existed?
Probably. I think that's certainly true. I mean,
it's pretty common across cultures, isn't it?
It is, and I think some of the options for treatment have evolved, but I do think this is not something new to our generation.
Do we know the prevalence of transgender persons in society?
There are a couple of studies from other European countries that have done surveys that it seems less common, maybe one in 12,000 or so for male to female transgender and even one to 30,000 for female to male. However, there have been some self-report studies in this country out of Boston looking at individuals who self-identified as transgender and increasing the percentage maybe to 0.5%. So maybe 1 per 100 or a little less than that. So I'm not sure that we know for certain, but clearly this is something in my clinical practice is a patient population that certainly exists and I think it needs services, needs support, needs to be recognized.
Sarah, did you want to add to that?
No, I think Dr. Carruthers is right on. I think we see there are some statistics that can say as much as 1% to 3% of the population identify as transgender. I think we're going to see the number maybe go up a little more as, you know, I think nationally we're recognizing this more and being more aware. And I think that's going to encourage more young people as well as adults to self-identify where maybe they've been not comfortable coming out yet.
You talk about transgender being an umbrella term.
Mm-hmm.
Are there categories or types of transgender people that come under that umbrella?
Yeah, I guess we can say there are. So as Dr. Carruthers mentioned, we see patients who identify as, you know, assigned female at birth but identify as male. So we would just say female to male or male to female. So we see gender as a spectrum. So you might identify as male or female, and then that could vary based on your assigned gender at birth. We also talk with patients who feel like they don't even fall on that spectrum. They don't particularly feel more male or more female, and maybe consider themselves what we would call non-binary. So binary being distinct, very male-female roles. We have a handful of people that really consider themselves non-binary, not in either role.
So when you're having go ahead, Dr. Carruthers.
Oh, I was just going to add to that. I think, you know, there's several different components of gender and gender identity, and we touched on some of it. So some of it is related to your physical characteristics or even your genetic makeup, so your chromosomes, if you have a Y chromosome or not. Some of it's related to gender roles, so what we presume are standard behaviors for either male or female gender roles. Some is related to identity. Some is related to sexuality, who you're attracted to, which is a different component, distinct from how you view oneself. And there's a number of pieces of this. So in some people, all of those things line up along one particular gender. In others, there's some incongruence between one or more of those things. And so like Sarah was saying, you know, for some people, it's more clear-cut than others, but for some, you know, even the male-to-female or female-to-male doesn't necessarily apply.
So, Sarah, you're having a conversation with somebody who's transgender, or maybe you're talking about a transgender friend. How do you know what name, what pronouns are appropriate? Because I think even in the transgender community, some folks have their own set of pronouns that they like to go by.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best thing you can do is to ask. It's always okay to say, what name do you prefer? What pronouns do you prefer? He, she? Some patients that we have prefer they and them and not he, him, she, her. So it's okay to just ask. And then we ask that you be respectful and use their preferences.
And Dr. Crothers, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I would just support what Sarah's saying. I think that really the best thing to do is just try to treat people with respect, and you know, regardless of gender identity, you know, these folks are just human beings just like us, and so it's, you know, right. Some people may have a preferred name, and it's really just as simple as saying, you know, how would you like to be addressed? And then often I will work with patients who are in the process of transition, so they may not be living full-time in their desired gender identity, and so there is some back and forth and some flux, and I'll often say, you know, I apologize in advance if I make a mistake, you know, please correct me, and I sort of set the ground rules that I want to be able to have an open conversation, and typically I think if you approach people with sort of openness and compassion and respect, then it's hard to mess up because they understand that you're trying, and if so, you've given permission to correct.
As I always say, I'm not a mind reader. Help me along with this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we're working to be more sensitive in our medical system so that, you know, if someone is identifying as transgender and they have a preferred name or preferred pronouns, that we're making note of that in their record so that when they encounter mm-hmm. registration staff or others or, you know, going for labs or other things, that it's noted in such a way that multiple encounters within the medical system can be more sensitive.
We'll continue our conversation after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can join in by calling 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me this afternoon, Dr. Sarah Carruthers with Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and University of Cincinnati Medical Center, and social worker Sarah Painter with the Transgender Health Clinic at Children's Hospital. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dr. Carruthers, what's the relationship between gender identity and sexual orientation?
That's a great question. So gender identity is a sense of how you view yourself, so your own maleness or femaleness. And sexual orientation is really whom you're attracted to. So one is internal looking, so how you identify your own self, and then the other is really who you're attracted to, or more outward looking towards other people. So for individuals who identify as transgender, they could be gay, they could be straight, they could be bisexual. Any of those things could apply.
Yeah, is transgender, is it considered a mental disorder?
No, it's not at all. So we actually see this as a part of normal development. We do have a diagnostic term that we use in the medical world called gender dysphoria. And so what that literally means is that it is we use that term for a patient who has distress regarding the sort of conflict between their inner sense of gender being different than their physical sex characteristics.
But just to be clear, not everybody who's transgender is suffering from some kind of distress, are they?
Yeah, so the thing that we actually find with most of our patients is, and most of trans people, the more that they transition socially and medically, the more their distress is improved. So we see decreases in depression, decreases in anxiety, and things like that that would come with that dysphoria.
Dr. Carruthers, how does someone know they're transgender? What are they feeling that makes them think, I'm transgender?
Yeah, so I think there's a commonly cited set of criteria in that the sensation of having a gender identity that's different than your physical or biological sex, that's persistent, consistent, and insistent, meaning that, you know, all children may explore gender roles, and even to some extent adults may explore different aspects of gender roles. As I said, there's different components of gender roles and identity. But for an individual for whom there is a deep incongruence between how they see themselves and how their physical body is, that is persistent, consistent, insistent, and again, that causes a significant degree of distress or dysphoria, that is someone who would meet criteria for transgender.
Sarah, what kinds of challenges and obstacles do transgender people face?
Well, so I think two of the biggest ones are acceptance and support. So a lot of transgender people and adults, as well as the young people that we see, they have a very difficult time coming out to their families and their peers and their friends. And then there's a level of everyone needing to learn and understand, hey, what's going on? So when we see families, they're really often in a state of crisis, and they need a lot of support and education. So one of the biggest obstacles, I would just say, is in general acceptance and fear of rejection. The second big obstacle is probably passing. So being able to pass as your identified gender, being able to use the male restroom if you identify as male, being referred to as male in public if that's how you identify. It's something that cisgender people, or cisgender is a term for those individuals whose inner sense of gender matches the outside. It's congruent. So your brain says you're female and so does your body. So
okay,
we would say that's a cisgender person. So it's something that cisgender people don't have to think about. You know, what bathroom am I going to use and be accepted? So passing is often a huge obstacle. I have breasts, but I'm male. So people are going to misgender me.
Okay. This is a difficult, confusing situation. I mean, mm-hmm. for parents and family.
Absolutely.
How can parents deal with this if they have a child who's transgender?
Well, so the one thing that I always say is if you're not quite ready, if you don't understand or you're not quite ready to accept, focus on just not rejecting. You can thank your child for coming out and disclosing what's going on with them. Then we need to look at and make sure that, you know, is your child safe? Are they having depression? Are they having anxiety? Are they suicidal? We need to focus on their mental health. The next thing you can do is really educate yourself. There's a lot of great resources out there. Educate yourself and start learning.
And Dr. Carruthers, what advice would you have for parents?
Oh, I mean, I work with Sarah and I agree with her wholeheartedly. I think, again, this is usually a process. This is not typically a situation where someone decides one day that they're transgender or wants to pursue treatment for transgender. I think this is something that evolves over time, and for some people can change over time. And so I think just emphasizing that, you know, you need to love and support your family members and so forth in the same way that you always have, but also even for adult patients who are going through a transition process, that this is something that does take time, and there's going to be a series of sort of layers of acceptance and support that will need to be passed through over time.
Dr. Carruthers, how does someone who's transgender make that gender transition?
So, I mean, it's individual, I'd have to say. I think it's probably not the same for any two people. From a medical standpoint, there's some clinical guidelines in how we can help guide this care, and it starts really, again, with having that mental health support engaged and involved, and then recommendations that someone would be encouraged to live a real-life experience, which is essentially living their self-identity, their preferred gender identity, full-time when possible. And then at that point, considering treatment with hormone options, which would be to provide affirming hormone therapy so that, again, we can start to align someone's self-gender identity with their biologic and characteristics, physical characteristics, so those two things are more congruent.
Sarah, are there any other terms that you think that people should know and understand to help follow this discussion?
On terms of transitioning?
On terms of being transgender.
I would just caution a few things. Terminology is a very, and language is very, very important. So we need to stay away from things like saying transgenderism or this person is a transgender. That's not appropriate to say. People aren't things. Like Dr. Carruthers said earlier today, trans people are human beings like everyone else. So learning the right language and learning to model that and research, that's just very important. And it's important in being respectful and in being sensitive.
Dr. Carruthers, do you have any other terms that people should know as part of this whole discussion?
Well, we touched on it a little bit, but I think that, just recognizing that what I've noticed in the media in part in relation to recent events, there is often a conflating between gender identity and sexuality. So sometimes transsexualism is used in place of transgender, and again, I just think that it's not always the not the same thing, and so just to right. to be aware that one's gender identity and their sexual orientation are not the same concept.
And how can I be supportive, Sarah, if I have a transgender family member or friend?
Because
that's an important component for transgenders, acceptance and
absolutely. A couple of things is recognize that person's the same person. And their personality quirks and traits are the same as you're always going to see. So when someone comes out to you as trans, we all go, the family member or the friend might go through a grief or loss period. So families can grieve. My daughter's now my son, and there's a grief in losing that daughter. So one thing you can do is work to get to know that person as your son or family member in whatever capacity. Ask them what their preferences are. Ask them how you can help them and be supportive. Be open to their answers and responses. Be open to listening and exploring with them. And recognize that it's really an individual journey for everyone. And it's an individual journey for the trans person involved.
Well, Sarah, go ahead if you want to add something to that.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I just want to support that, too. I just think that there's so many variations in experiences because people come from different levels of family support, acceptance, or potential rejection, but also even professionally. So for adults, there's multiple different venues. So people have their personal life and their professional life, and sort of the process of transition can be very challenging as you try to navigate those different realms of your life. And so really just trying to be supportive for people where they are at that journey, I think, is really important.
Absolutely.
Well, Sarah and Dr. Carruthers, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Our pleasure.
Dr. Sarah Carruthers, Assistant Professor of Internal Medicine and Pediatrics and Adult and Pediatric Endocrinology with Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and University of Cincinnati Medical Center. Also, Social Worker Sarah Painter with the Transgender Health Clinic at Children's Hospital.